Howdy folks, this is The Good Speaking. Thanks for tuning in. Make sure to like and subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and TikTok. Enjoy the gold.
Welcome back. Fanfare, please. Drumroll, please.
Spectacular.
The Mulan Boys.
Yes. We are kicking off the month of February with some romantic movies, I guess.
Endeavors.
Good and bad.
It is a month of love and
leading up to Valentine's.
And passion,
yes.
And jealousy and brothels. And that's exactly what we've brought for you today.
Yes.
On this, the greatest show on earth. The Good, the Bad, and the Boys, baby.
Can cans. Yes. And sparkling diamonds. But, and what better way to go into the ideas of romance and love than French-American adaptations? It seems like this week is just filled with them.
Oh, baby.
Yes.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Good, the Bad, and the Boys podcast. We are your tender, loving hosts. I'm Taryn.
I'm Isaac, and to start off this romantic evening, or morning, or whatever time of day you're watching this from, we are bringing you a 2001 jukebox musical, one of my favorite musicals of all time, starring Obi-Wan himself, Moulin Rouge, a Baz Luhrmann film, So you can expect all types of craziness and mash of tragedy, love, all these themes, all this bohemian themes.
Oh, yes.
It's like Great Gatsby madness. It's pretty great.
Which he also directed.
Yeah, yep. That was also one of his movies. So you can expect that franticness out of this movie. But it's a great film. It's kind of funny. My parents had this DVD sitting on our like little DVD shelf growing up, like almost my entire life, I feel like. I watched it like freshman year of high school. But yeah, it seems like, Okay. Yeah, even according to my roommate, her stepdad also had Moulin Rouge as like one of their first DVDs.
I think that's just a staple
like
of,
back in 2001
of a theater kid, is that you got Moulin Rouge,
I guess so,
sitting on your TV stand, staring at you every day.
Yeah, every day until you watch it. And it wasn't until high school that I gave it a watch.
Honestly, that's for the best.
So, yes.
This movie, despite being marketed towards teenagers, yeah, is about a brothel, and I just couldn't picture like a 10-year-old Isaac comes home from church. His mom's like, "Okay, sweetie, time to watch Moulin Rouge."
Put in that DVD.
Put in that DVD.
Oh, hey, Obi-Wan's in this. Oh my God,
Obi-Wan's in this. Mom, what are boobies?
Obi-Wan, what is he doing with that woman?
What is that? Well,
yes.
Her name went from Sabine to Satine. That was
yes,
Clone Wars. I hope nobody got that.
Well, actually, yeah, the Obi-Wan's, it can't be a coincidence. Duchess Satine of Mandalore had to have been based off of Satine from this movie. There's just no way.
That must have been.
It has to be
a little Easter egg there.
Yeah.
Because her character concept was, they just made her up, like for that show, right? She wasn't in any books or anything that came
right
out prior
no,
to Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. Not that I believe so. I think that's a Filoni exclusive
wow
character.
Look at us making discoveries.
Wars, so. Yeah. And they have the same romance in this movie.
Forbidden love.
Actually, a little bit. Yeah, a little forbidden love. And this movie, I guess, is part of Baz Luhrmann's, I guess he named this a trilogy of movies that he's made. He made Strictly Ballroom and like in the 90s, I have not seen that. And after Moulin Rouge, I got to see it. Got to see the Strictly Ballroom. And then also the Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio, which I actually like. A couple of people don't really like it, but
I watched it in
I enjoy it
in high school, like for English class, which obviously like put a bad taste
yeah
of it in my mouth. But the more I think about it,
right,
the better it was. Like looking back on it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. I think it's so funny just bringing that into a modern sense and like,
yeah, that modern
using
adaptation
swords,
of it,
but they're like pistol, like modifications of a sword or so. It was pretty funny. It's just it was pretty whack. But yeah, this whole idea of a crazy kind of frantic musical movies, I guess, or love stories are in his Red Curtain trilogy. So
the Red Curtain, yeah.
I need to go watch Strictly Ballroom and complete my Red Curtain trilogy experience.
And those were all just movies that he made, like regarding Romeo and Juliet was previously like a, you know, a Shakespearean theatrical property, but most of them, Moulin Rouge especially, just deals with very theatrical themes, just the exaggerated emotions and the, I don't know, what's the word? The bravado.
Good old Bohemian French Revolution.
Oh, yes.
Truth, beauty, and freedom, and above all, love.
Yep.
So yeah, that's just plastered throughout the entire movie.
Oh, yeah.
Your very artistic philosophy of the time back in the early 1900s, I want to say.
The movie takes place in like the mid, 1899, the movie takes place. Bohemianism.
1899.
Yeah. Sort of a thing around like the mid 19th century. So started maybe like, I don't know, 40-ish years before the movie came out. So it was at like, it was at its peak in Europe around that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it just kind of drives that into you. Whole movie, just those fun liberal concepts, I suppose.
Yes, you could call them. This is all just like
hippie concepts.
Some gypsy commune in Paris, where everyone goes to live and just express unapologetic
red
art.
Light district. Yeah,
which I was reading or watching some reviews of this, and a lot of people didn't like, I suppose, the style of it all, and like the way the characters acted and the cuts. The cutting is it's unique. I could see how some people would find it like jarring and kind of it's unconventional to be sure. I think it did have a purpose in this movie. Yeah. You know, I'm just a slut for genre, and this is the movie like Rent wishes it was as stylish as this movie. Balls deep in the bohemian style of just it all. It's just unapologetically itself, very bombastic, very out there. And that's shown in a lot more than just the characters and the setting. It's in the technical proceedings of the movie as well.
Yeah, technical aspects and even the story structure, too. I mean, it's both tragedy and a romantic story, so there's a big clash. And it's comedy as well, so it's got a little comedy in there. It's just this huge clash of everything you could ever want this craziness that is Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how people were turned away from it because it's a lot when I remember first watching it, I was like, whoa, things are happening way too fast. Whoa, what is going on? This is nuts. This world of Moulin Rouge is nuts. What's going on? You know, it's I felt like this almost the same stress levels as like watching Legion or like just the franticness of everything. So I can see that people are turned off by it, but if you can kind of look past it and follow it, it's really quite a fun, unique story. I think, too, Baz Luhrmann's his idea, too, on this. The reason why it's like a jukebox musical is that he wanted to portray Christian as like this really outstanding musician for his time.
Mm.
So that's why he had Christian and these people singing more modern takes because they're, you know, ahead of their time. So I think that was like one of his commentaries.
Yeah, and I was like, noticing the specific,
the movie and whatnot, and how he,
like the artists, the songs that they chose for the musical, were all people
who
could be considered by today's standards sort of bohemians themselves. The one that stood out to me the most was the Elton John song that Christian sang. Elton John is as counterculture as they come. And stuff like that. And the certain performers that they have in there, people like Pink, who's very like unapologetic rock star.
Yeah.
Beck performs the Diamond Dogs one. He's very experimental in his thing, and he doesn't really let himself get tied down to like too many genres. He branches out a lot, he's all over the place. People like Bono are in it.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Which again, I think is, I feel, or at least what I gathered was that all this was sort of intentional on Baz Luhrmann's part to sort of make this seem as bohemian a work as possible. It really is just like a throw all your shit against the wall kind of just raw art and emotion put to screen.
Yeah.
Which is very chaotic.
Exactly. And I mean, sure, you can, you could say that some of the songs are a little outdated by today's standards, but there's still a lot of things that kind of stand the test of time, like, you know, Elton John and Bono. And so he used smart artists and their songs in that way for the time of like 2001 and stuff. And yeah, I think many of it, like the majority of it, definitely holds up today. And I can still feel that sense that what Baz Luhrmann is trying to go for.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely based this off of a lot of French opera.
Yeah, big opera vibes.
A lot of people kind of claim this as something out of La Boheme or Mille or a bunch of like these French operas. Yeah, and I guess in one of his inspirations for Moulin Rouge, he actually viewed a Bollywood Midsummer's Night Dream, followed the same techniques that Baz Luhrmann uses in this movie. So that's kind of what like inspired him. He's like, all right, you know, I think I'm gonna try this Bohemian style and just go nuts with it. A lot of great stuff. Baz Luhrmann is kind of a genius. I just love how this movie is.
It's certainly very experimental, especially for a musical, a TV musical. Or like a movie musical.
Yeah.
Certainly goes, it tries different things than, you know, what you'd expect from another jukebox musical, like a Mamma Mia or something to do.
Yeah.
This one, but.
Yeah, it's definitely is contrast in some of those well-known, yeah. Where I just think Moulin Rouge is just a little smarter than some of those other musicals. The other musicals are more reminiscent on that type of, like in the case of Mamma Mia. It's more reminiscent on ABBA and their influence and like Jersey Boys, you know, it's like the whole quartet dudes from the 50s. It's kind of reminiscing on this time. Moulin Rouge, sure, it kind of reminisces on that whole French Revolution ideas, but it also, I mean, you could even apply this and the way that he used some of those modern pop songs to kind of show that it is ahead of its time and these ideas are more, you know, universal throughout all, you know, all ages and every generation. There's something to take from, you know, this whole idea.
This is an all ages movie, Isaac.
So, well, no, I meant all generations, not like, you know, generations, not all ages.
How early did you start this watching
not,
this movie,
this Isaac? Is not for...
5-year-old Isaac watching Moulin Rouge. Yes,
yeah, no, that didn't happen. But no, yes, this is definitely a high school on movie. But yes, so I just feel like this is a little bit more universally. This can be more universally applied, and I think that's brilliant how Baz Luhrmann just kind of uses those ideas. And it still applies, so yes.
Well, a lot of the themes and story points of it are pulled from other works, especially like, you know, the Shakespearean tragedy, a lot of the like just classic stuff about like love and forbidden love, especially, and fate and legacy and all that the characters are striving for. It's all very timeless themes and such. So I think that is also a reason why, like you were saying, it could be considered timeless, was just because it has timeless themes. It's sort of this gypsy amalgamation of other genres and motifs and such all thrown together in this very rowdy and chaotic brothel, sort of the gathering point.
Yeah.
And we see that, like, again, even in just the coloring of the film, everywhere that's not the Moulin Rouge is like basically black and white. It's just like grays and blues.
Yeah.
Outside, even just outside the building, and the rest of the city is just gray, shitty 19th century France.
Yeah.
And then once you get
this Moulin Rouge is kind of like the promised land, you know, of taking away your grim, dour depression of life and enjoying yourselves in the Moulin Rouge. So it's definitely that contrast. And so it's very, very dour city of Paris.
It also seemed very,
but anyways.
I don't know what I got, like some Gilded Age vibes from it, sort of like that post-Civil War era, like Western culture was all very you know, like post-industrial revolution. It was all like, it had this veneer, this sparkle to it. But then, you know, as the movie goes on and as you peel back the layers, it's pretty shitty place. Not the best.
Yeah. Right.
Nobody actually.
It starts to deteriorate, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody really wants to be there. They put on the show. The show must go on, as they say, throughout the film. But, you know, like deep down, they're not, nobody's really happy. They want,
no,
they want love. And
it's really a horrible existence, really. Yeah. It's almost like they're just confined. No matter where they're at, they're confined to how society is back in the day. It's a suppression no matter where they go. Like, even the whole business side of the Moulin Rouge is being hijacked by the Duke, and, you know, and they're being suppressed by him, and, you know, they're just not able to freely express their humanly desires, wants. They're just, they're totally being, you know, bogged down by this dour, depressive world. And, so it sucks.
Yeah, I think that's shown nowhere more than in the, what's it called? The Roxanne Tango that they do, where everyone is all sad and mopey. He's got the black trench coat on. And for some reason, his hair looked darker as he's walking around singing. Sabine and the Duke are up in the gray tower talking about trading in like her autonomy for her career. And then there's the Argentinian guy singing Roxanne to, what was it? I think it was like some new girl who's going to be a dancer there. And the lyrics of Roxanne are like, you don't have to put on the red light, Roxanne. You don't have to sell your body, Roxanne. Yeah. But then interjected into his singing, he's like, you can't don't fall in love, can't do any of this. And he's literally like passing her around to every guy on the stage. And she's not having it. He's just like breaking her down like everyone else there. Like probably Sabine has been that they you know, they can't fall in love. The show must go on. So it is really, underneath it is sort of this dark, dark lifestyle. This
dark suppression.
Yeah. Even in this bohemian paradise or whatever Ewan referred to it as at the beginning of the film when he was going out there to live his dreams and talk about love, freedom, and truth. Like none of that is actually in the Moulin Rouge. It's they have to find it themselves.
Yeah. You have to find it, which they find in their own relationship between his connection with him and Satine. Yeah, they find it themselves. It's more of an inner reflection and more of an intimate reflection upon themselves. And the Moulin Rouge has nothing to do with it, you know. So it's interesting. It's almost like Christian is the true bohemian amidst the whole entirety of the Moulin Rouge ensemble.
Yeah,
he's who's really discovering what it really means to love and the beauty and truth and freedom with him and Satine. He's definitely the hero, the Jedi Master himself. Yes.
And this movie came out between, when did Attack of the Clones come out?
Attack of the Clones was like,
2002.
Like, I think it was around 2002 was Attack of the Clones?
Yeah, okay, so this movie came out between...
2005 was Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. And Ewan McGregor's just out here, just nailing it with his beautiful voice.
Yeah.
My man is just drowning in hose.
He really is. Like, that is... He's...
America's sweetheart.
He is wonderful. Ewan McGregor. I love his song. I love your song, his Elton John rendition of it. Mm-hmm. Like, Ewan McGregor, I mean, you know, he's not, like, the greatest singer in the world, but just the rawness and just what Ewan brings to it, it's beautiful. Wonderful man.
He's the greatest wonderful singer in my world.
Yeah. Him and Hugh Jackman, man, they are idols to me. So, yeah. Great, great stuff. And then you have this awesome, great performance by Ewan, and then he gets... He has to jump right into Attack of the Clones.
And then it's right back to
all the shitty dialogue, and that's right back to business. But great performances all around, really. I don't think there's really a single performance I didn't like in there. I thought everyone was just fully committed. They casted perfectly. These actors are like, for a story and for a movie like this, you just have to fully commit and just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any lagging of actors, like, performances or anything just would totally just, you know, slow down Baz Luhrmann's vision. And it was just really important that he casted, you know, correctly for this. And I think he did. I think everyone, there really wasn't a single person I didn't like.
Yeah, Nicole and Ewan especially really just killed it. John Leguizamo, yeah. he was very funny in it. it was all right.
Yeah, that is, it's great to see him again.
Yeah, that is a callback to that bohemian culture that Luhrmann is trying to emulate in it, in which you sort of a disregarding of, you know, personal feelings. Like he just secedes from conventional life and stuff, and it's really just art is all life is.
Yeah.
And it's kind of what it is for the characters in this movie. Until, you know, the love thing gets going. They've just have disregarded all semblance of conventional society to just go be weird in the Moulin Rouge. And yeah, I think that's emulated very well in the performances. Everyone's just fully committed. It's a weird, weird movie with some weird, weird characters.
Yeah. Oh, even in the beginning when Ewan McGregor is trying to help them out with The Sound of Music or whatever, there's the original writer for the song, like that. I think the actor it's Faramir or whatever, the Faramir actor.
The guy from Iron Fist?
I think that was him. Okay. The original writer who, like, walked out on them because Ewan McGregor was stealing his spotlight. That was him. He just showed up. So funny. Funny performances. I thought, like, even the Duke, what a derpy, sinister villain, you know, just like weasel.
He's like the Shakespearean villain.
Yeah, yeah. He's got the mustache, you know, he's the mustache twirling villain.
He's got the mustache. He is
the
he tries to buy love. And he's
Maharaja himself. Yeah. And of course Harry Zidler too. I think beforehand I saw him in Harry Potter as Mr. you know, Professor Slughorn, so I was like, oh cool, and then all of a sudden he's Harry Zidler and he just goes ham with it, and I was like, that was pretty cool. I was like, oh wow, these guys have range, these actors. You just, when they're put into a movie like this, you can see that they just showcase their range, and it's pretty good. Just great visuals too. Yeah, like we said with the Moulin Rouge, just very, very bright red, and I love the elephant room and whatnot, and just kind of the kind of funny Looney Tunes like gag that you get with the three other or like the four other personnel, like that troop that Ewan McGregor's part of, and they're trying to like see how Ewan's doing, Christian's doing with
his
little selling of the spectacular. It's just a funny little like quips and slapstick, and yeah, it's a fun time. Like they're it's so funny, just all the gags and everything. I think the humor is really just funny if you're into that. And yeah, just a lot of great moments.
Yeah, the slapstick humor works the best in this movie since it is such a kinetic film. Things are constantly in motion, mm-hmm. and that's when it's at its strongest, is, you know, when things are moving around. It's got the bright colors, red, like you said, common color associated with things like passion, rage, and love, which are all shared between the main protagonist as well as the villain. His jealousy drives him to near madness.
It's jealousy, yes.
Yeah, all the colors are shown in there. I think probably just the motion, the choreography of it all, and how that's combined with the editing within the context of this theme of this sort of weird subgenre of the jukebox musical, of which I don't think there's really anything quite like it. From anything else, that's definitely what's at its strongest. Was there anything you didn't like about it? Any weak points?
Didn't like this? Yeah, trying to think. I don't know. Yeah, I really like this movie, so it's hard to pinpoint what I didn't like. I don't know. I again, I just was so entranced by it. I'm trying to think, like, I don't know. There might be, like, if you look back on some of the editing, you could tell that they were really trying, like, as fast as they could to, like, do a transition, or there's interesting editing moments that are a little, that can kind of take you out. You're that was a weird cut, or that
in
was
some spots.
Yeah, maybe a little too far. Yeah. I think there's also sometimes that there can be an imbalance of, like, I would have liked to linger more on Satine and Christian and their romance, and kind of linger more on that, have them have more of a still, quiet moment together. I just feel like this movie kind of goes too fast where we don't get to serenade with it. So I would like to have a little bit more moments between them, like during their songs and whatnot, because it's just, again, with how the musical numbers go and how, you know, everything is just being plastered out there. Everything's just kind of going crazy in this explosion of love and glory, when I just would have liked to see a little bit more of some still moments. But again, I think too, as the story is structured too, I think more towards the end, that's when we get more of those moments between them, like some really deep moments. And that's when the movie, I feel like, kind of slows down just a bit once she's kind of trying to
die,
get Christian away. So the Duke doesn't take away the deed to the Moulin Rouge, or, you know, her whole, and she gets her moment of fame, and she has to protect Christian and send him away. And, you know, it kind of slows down a bit. So we get a little bit more of those heavy moments. But anyways, I just love how magical this movie is. It just seems very dreamlike. Like, this is something definitely out of a weird dream. Just the starry night. I love the Your Song, where they're just leaping across the rooftops of Paris and swinging around like the Eiffel Tower. And you got this mustache moon just singing opera to them and whatnot, and it's great. It's just such a fun dreamlike quality that you get from it.
Yeah.
You just kind of get entranced,
kind of weird
by this French
experimental stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, I'd agree that it definitely fits exactly together the best.
Yeah, and it kind of goes into like the George Méliès early films of like the early 1900s, and like, you know, the trip to the moon. You just kind of get some of those French vibes. Just that French culture back in the day. And yeah, I just love that scenery that you get from it. So
nice.
So great movie. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's certainly very weird, and I could see why some people get turned off by it. I certainly started to enjoy it more. I was a part way through the film, I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I started reading through a little more on like European bohemianism and stuff like that, and it seems like Lerman's goal was really for it to be sort of a love letter to the time period and the just sort of the philosophy as a whole, just kind of a celebration of that in the good and bad forms that it comes in, you know, because as it does say, it's the conventionality of life. It is just sort of an unyielding pursuit of art at the cost of everything else. And we see in the movie, it does cost a lot of the characters, you know, their love lives and the just those quiet moments, like you were talking about.
It's high stakes, yeah.
Yeah, it does cost him that. And that Ewan and, fuck, what's her name? And Nicole Kidman are able to find that anyway and still be able to, you know, express themselves throughout. That was a nice little nod to it as to what the idyllic bohemian lifestyle would be like. And like you said, that is strongest. It's represented the strongest in those moments where it is just sort of a bunch of shit thrown at the screen at once in this chaotic, high energy.
Yeah, chaotic mess.
Yeah, especially the first scene when they enter the Moulin Rouge.
I mean, a perfect.
And it's just a shit show of color and actions like that.
It's a kaleidoscopic craziness. And I think even the whole like spectacular little pitch meeting with the Duke. I think people would see that scene in particular and be like, "What is wrong with this movie?" You know, it's just like, "What is happening?" I think it's hilarious. They're just trying their hardest. Everyone's trying their hardest to just cover up what's really going on behind the scenes, and like, you know, Christian and Satine and and Harry trying to save the Moulin Rouge and not upset the Duke because he's a great asset to to the Moulin Rouge. So it's just a great scene where everyone's just covering up everything and they just make a play out of it because circumstances required it.
The show must go and on. And
they needed they needed some excuse to the Duke on their shenanigans. So that's just it's just happened.
Once again, they've just sort of gilded over all their problems with show tunes and pizzazz. Called it a day.
Yeah. Too bad life can't be that way.
Dang.
In real life, I would love to sing my cares away every minute of the day.
I'm keeping this silence in so that in post we can edit in like the intro to a musical number, and then we sing a song here. Okay, we'll cut that in later.
We'll cut that in. Perfect. Okay, perfect. So yes, the boys. Perhaps we will dedicate our podcast lives to finding truth, beauty, freedom, and above all, lore.
Because
we are a lore channel.
Above all, lore.
Above all.
Yes, but if you guys are looking for something new, I would definitely check out Moulin Rouge if you're a fan of musicals or just like counterculture expressions in general. This is a great dissection of it, a celebration of it, a good way to see a comic exaggeration of that 19th century gypsy French lifestyle of just the explosion of art and culture, which, again, the movie does a great job of. I would say the movie's weakest moments are the quiet moments when things slow down and it's just dialogue.
Oh, okay.
Because then, slow down. Gotcha. In my opinion, the movie is at its strongest when it's that kaleidoscopic clusterfuck of colors and songs and whatnot, just the raw emotion of it all.
I mean, you know, it gives moments to breathe, but
you're right. Pacing purposes.
If Baz is trying
they are required.
Yeah, it's for pacing purposes, but you're right. Like, we're already going through the motions. We're already exploding in lights, color, art, you know.
Yeah, we're going through it.
You know, so I understand that.
And all the themes and stuff, the quiet moments when characters are supposed to contemplate the events of the more lively stuff and come to decisions and revelations about themselves. It just doesn't really happen in the quiet moments as much. They're just sort of mixed in with the bigger moments, with the songs and the dancing and whatnot.
Oh yeah, that's
true. It's shown more in there as opposed to in the moments between. Which I guess I don't know, it's a blessing and a curse. It makes the bigger moments better, but it makes the quiet moments lack the same emphasis. So in those moments, I was kind of taken out of it.
Suffer for it,
In those moments, my head was turned reading lore about 19th century bohemianism.
All right. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I can see that. But great Valentine's watch. If you guys are looking for anything, with a significant other, and just put on this. You guys will have a fun time, or maybe not. Maybe you'll be scared, and it might be a little too much, maybe too much stimulation.
Maybe it will inspire your significant other to abandon all semblance of conventional romance and dedicate their life to the unyielding practice of raw art, and your relationship will suffer because of it.
Though you may
try to support them in their dreams ultimately overtake their feelings for you. And while you don't say it at first, you feel it. You feel the quiet resentment. You feel the love turn rotten, the love turn to hate as theirs turns to indifference in their pursuit of their passions. And what then? What is it? What is the foundation of a glass tower if not suffering, if not pain? Or you might get laid because it's a real fun movie. So up to you guys. Give it a watch. See what happens.
And perfect. I'm just going to send my friend here some therapist information, some counseling, love counseling, relationship counseling. All right. Anyways, have a happy Valentine's, y'all. Have a great February week. First week of February. And I hope you enjoy Moulin Rouge as much as I do. And we will catch you on Thursday for another French adaptation film.
A much worse one.
A much worse one, yes. And it could be the very origins of a sociopathic serial killer.
Yeah, I think we think it's a serial killer prequel story. It's also a movie that idolizes catfishing. So if you're into that, that's the movie for you. Come check out The Boys. Watch Sierra Burgess Is a Loser on Thursday, but watch Moulin Rouge first, because, or maybe watch it after, so you're in a better mood.
Okay. Get you in a more happy mood. Yeah. All right. Sounds good. We'll see you guys next time.
Goodbye. Kiss, kiss.
Howdy, y'all. This is Terran, a.k.a. The Bad. Thank you for tuning in to our new program. Don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't get dysentery. Now, everybody pretend that I rode off into the sunset. Bye now.